Chapter 5, The Politics of Development. The time has now come to look at the fourth of the great revolutions of our day, the revolution of political equality. It is everywhere at work in the underdeveloped and uncommitted nations, and everywhere, too, it complicates and even exacerbates relations between the rich nations and the poor. It is an all-embracing concept of equality, equality of the nation, of the race, of the class. Above all, the equality of man with man in the New World Society that is beginning to emerge. Most of the poor and uncommitted lands have acquired this vast, almost cosmic vision of equality as a result of
talk will center around the mission work in Nigeria, highlighting mission work in the light of the present political situation over there. And Stuart will concentrate on the various specialized ministries that are now going on in Nigeria. We thank you for coming and hope that you'll have an informative evening.
I want to thank all of those present here tonight for coming and giving your undivided attention as we take a look at a country that is perhaps a third of the way around the world, in which many of us, perhaps in the future, will be there ourselves as missionaries. Tonight, I'm hoping that our conversation and discussion will stimulate some questions, which, although I'm no authority on Africa by no means, I would be glad to try to answer. Recently, you have heard much about the political situation in Nigeria. About halfway through our presentation, we're going to take a small break in order that the men downstairs who are taping the program can change their tapes and that you can have a rest. And at that time, I will try to diagram on the board exactly what has happened in Nigeria, that they have lost their government in the last 3 weeks. Could someone catch the lights, please? In the name of Jesus Christ, the Son of God and Savior of the world, amen. From Greenland's icy mountains, from India's coral strand, where Africa's sunny fountains roll down their golden sand. From many an ancient river, from many a palmy plain, they call us to deliver their land from error's chain. Can we, whose souls are lighted with wisdom from on high, can we to men benighted the lamp of life deny? Salvation, oh salvation, the joyful sound proclaim, till each remotest nation has learned Messiah's name.
for the few of you in the crowd who might be Germans, may I say that this is not the German spelling, but the Missouri Synod spelling. Tonight, the Jungle, Juju, and Jesus, brought to you by the courtesy of Metra, Goldwyn, and Jackson. Approximately 6 months were required to take a 40,000-mile, 23-country tour. This was an educational tour to study the mission fields of many of the Christian denominations of the world. The specific purpose was to do a study of medical missions. Can our church possibly use men in the theological area as medical doctors? Is it practical? What are the chances of using it? How can this be accomplished? These were the many questions which I had to answer. The trip began in a small burg, Independence, Kansas, through Africa, Asia, and Europe. Tonight, we will concentrate only on one particular set of slides, those involving our missionary challenge in Nigeria. Africa is a land of the modern. Look at this scene. You see a shell sign. This could be St. Louis, Missouri, but it says the Bank of West Africa Limited. Yes, Africa in many ways is a land where education is God and money its goddess. You see the modern in pictures like this. This is a Lutheran church. Could be Corpus Christi, Texas, but it's not. It's Dar es Salaam, Tanzania. A Lutheran hospital, Bumbuli Hospital, Tanzania. A six-story, ultra-modern medical school in Ibadan, Nigeria. A new university, the University of Nairobi, Kenya. A library. Radio, the radio voice of the gospel, RVOG in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, bringing the gospel message to three continents, Europe, Asia, and Africa, fed by 20 feeder stations, of which one of our own fellow students, Robert O'Sullivan, is working in the Nigeria studios. This station, beaming in about 25 languages, hits every major dialect in Africa today. Its three transmitters, 100,000 watts, and set of 23 towers, of which the tallest is 1,000 feet, beam off of the ionosphere all over Africa. And this is run by the Lutheran World Federation. News and the gospel both are tinged by Lutheranism in Africa. Sculpturing and other forms of art, stained glass windows, all are evidence of the new modern Africa. But yet on the other side, we must look at the primitive Africa. This picture here depicts a scene of one of our own mission fields in the Agoge province of Nigeria, in which this Wanakondi village, I was approximately the fifth white man to be seen by some of the members of this tribe. Looking at the young seminarians, we know the Western trend has certainly influenced them in their clothing. There are other people in Africa, the natives, who would just as soon lop off your head as look at you in the troubled areas of the Congo, Angola, Rhodesia. It's a land which has modern conveniences, much as we know them here in our country. Irons. Although they're not electric, they are kerosene. But for a woman to use one of those irons, she probably washed her clothes in the local river, pond, or creek. Men such as Morton Stanley, overlooking the Congo River on this statue, had much to do with carving out the modern Africa. And on the eastern side of this continent, President Kenyatta. It's a land which has diseases which, even though we may have heard of, we certainly have never seen. Leprosy. Notice the fingers and the toes. Elephantitis, a disease caused by the filaria fly, which inserts a small microbe into the body. This microbe infects, causing infection to hit the lymph system, blocking the lymph glands, and this enormous swelling, 3-4 times the natural size. Now, these open ulcers can be cured, but the receding of the elephantitis itself, the swelling of the limbs, will never take place. In Africa today, an average of 90 out of 100 children die before the age of 2.5 years old because of malnutrition. Here you see a little girl beyond the point. It also has medical problems which are very common yet to us. Burns. This little girl who was caught in a brush fire in which her hut burned, came to our doctors at Eckett. But she did not understand bacteria. She did not understand infection. And her parents were afraid that the doctors might harm her and took her away. And as a result, her burn did infect and she did die. In Africa, 7 out of 10 operations are hernias. Why? Because the man does not work. It is a world in which the woman is a piece of furniture. She is his property. All the heavy work done by the woman. Therefore, although these men are thin, yet their stomachs develop very loose, flabby muscles, causing these hernia bags. Now it is among the Africans that the hernia operation is a sign of status. And when this man got on the operating table, he said to Dr. Beth Yankee, "Lay me wide open, because the longer the scar, the more prestige in his tribe." The young gentleman here helping her has been trained to assist, although he has never had any formal training. The doctors in Africa are so short that they have to train many to perform with them, although they do not have the educational background. It's a land which has modern hospitals, as we see at a Catholic hospital in Anawa, Nigeria. But it's a land which has hospitals built for Africans, as we see at Dr. Schweitzer's in Lambarini, Gabon. Perhaps this hospital would not meet up to our particular sanitation and hygienical standards, but in Africa, the Africans will come to such a hospital because they know this is the way they live. From the womb, to the tomb. Our church, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, as well as many other Christian denominations, are working through the medias of missionaries to bring not only the gospel message of Jesus, but also a new economic, modern, political, social, and cultural Africa to new high standards. Let us now take a look at the country of Nigeria. This would be a typical scene from the air. It's a land which has a diversity in temperatures between about 40 and 115, depending on where they are and what parts of the year you are encountering. This is Lagos, the capital city, 350,000. The largest city in Nigeria, Ibadan, 500,000. All total, about 55 million people live in Nigeria today. Lagos, a name to remember, a name that has been in the news quite frequently lately. A city with a large harbor, exporting and importing many goods for the people of this country, their chief export being tin and lead. Lagos being the capital is a place you will find many embassies. And for you that might be going over there, this is also a refreshing thought to know that your government is thinking of you. Here you are, the Embassy of the United States in Nigeria. Frequently visited, or formerly visited, should I say, by men such as Balewa, the Premier of Nigeria. This is the house of the former Premier who was assassinated 3 weeks ago by the name of Balewa. From the capital Lagos, we must travel farther north because in Lagos itself we have a very, very small nucleus of Lutherans, most of our work being in the eastern region. Lagos is situated in the west. This is Ibadan, a city about 2 hours by flight north of Lagos, which is known for many things. Firstly, the largest city in Nigeria. Secondly, the University of Nigeria, which housed at this time about 30,000 students. This is a chapel, a Protestant chapel on the campus. One of the students at this university is James Meredith, the gentleman who caused considerable publicity when he was rejected from the University of Mississippi several years back. Jim is now a student of political science, trying to earn a degree in hopes to return to this state and to run as a congressman or senator. But this is the person that we want to take especially note of, Mrs. Marion Younghans, the wife of Charles Younghans and their family. Charles Younghans is with the Technical University of Ibadan. He's in charge of their engineering department there. And we know from his contacts in the States, you may have heard of him, he was a teacher and professor for a good time at Valparaiso. His wife, Marion Younghans, has many talents. There are no missionaries, Lutheran missionaries, in this area whatsoever, so she conducts services and Bible class. But most important, she has started a deaf school, the first Lutheran deaf school in Africa, and one of the very first starts of deaf schools in Africa. At present, there are around 9 students there. And this is a Sunday morning service in which the students are, in sign language, saying the Lord's Prayer. their dinner table, their living quarters, and their playground. I noticed in our crowd this evening we have one Dr. Herbert Mayer, who is in charge of our mission work for Africa. It was just recently that he announced the fact that the work that Marion Younghans began is now to be taken over by the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod. And when she leaves there in the coming year, our church will send a missionary pastor in there to continue the work that she has started in the deaf school. Now moving away from the western region, we go to the eastern region where the Lutheran Church is doing most of its work today. Notice the blue region. This is Obot Edom. The blue region up at the far northern corner is the Agoja province. In Africa, it does not matter, really, what missionary has contacted you, whether you're going to be a Christian, a Muslim, a Lutheran, a Catholic, a Jew, but rather in what region you are born in. Many years ago, it was decided by several of the mission boards that let's divide up this country and not make it so confusing to the inhabitants, the natives. They wondering why we have so many different missionaries preaching so many different things. Our church happens to have this particular region and this one. And now let us look at Obot Edom and Agoja. We begin our trip at the capital of the eastern region, Enugu. From there, we start out towards our mission fields in the Agoja province across these modern highways. You notice a gentleman with his head in the rear of the car. This is Dr. Robert Cole, owning a PhD in agriculture. But yet this does not exempt him from doing common menial labor. Most of the work on the cars in this area are done by him. Anything that has to be done, someone has to do it, and they don't always have the engineers, the technicians, and the mechanics. So our missionaries themselves do it. Now, Dr. Cole lives in this house. You notice it is not wood. Wood would fall to the termites in no time at all. Two of his children. You notice the young man in the back is named Stephen Oboko. Steve is the son of a chief of the Yala people who is presently in prison because of an uprising which he instigated. One of our missionaries, Eugene Bunkowski, was instrumental in putting that revolt down. And Steve is now working as a houseboy, as many of the missionaries have houseboys, for the Robert Cole family. And for babysitting, you notice he ties the children together so they won't wander apart too far. An electric Lux. Mosquito netting. Africa is infested with malaria caused by the bite of a certain mosquito. So at night, everyone sleeps usually under the nets. Around the coal house was a fire line. You noticed it wasn't cleared too well, and I mentioned this to him, but it's possible a fire that would start could cross this line. He said, yes, he knew that. He's going to clear it away in the next week or so. But he didn't have an opportunity. For there was a major fire in the Agoja province, and all the experimental hybrid work that Robert Cole had done for 3 years was completely wiped out. It was a discouraging moment. But with his faith continued in God, he went ahead and began again from what he had learned in order that he could take to these people the way to plant their crops, the way that they could best have the nutritional values needed by their body. And not doing this purely for the economic reasons or for the reasons of self-preservation, but for the reason to show them that it was not they who made this grow, but God who caused the little seed to grow into the plant which nourished their body, making religion and Christ very practical in the lives of these natives. Notice in the background, this is called tropical alfalfa. An acorn squash, another experiment. The idea was to see if this crop would grow and produce in Africa. The result was very negative. It seems like a certain wasp will sting the bud of this flower, inserting its own pupae, and they in turn will eat what is remaining. So as you can see, something else must be accomplished in this area. Pineapples have been quite productive, but they have never been grown at this time in Africa. Another plant is the avocado, but it's really not too practical itself because each particular plant must have its own shade. The tropical heat will burn it up otherwise. Bougainvillea, and other colorful flowering plants are very numerous. Now you're probably wondering what this building is. It's a chicken coop. Why such a strong, sturdy chicken coop? To keep out the wild animals that might decide to have a chicken dinner. They also keep in here rabbits and other type of smaller animals which they are raising. The Coles live on a compound which was originally meant to be a Bible center where evangelists would be trained. Our church was making such leaps and bounds in Africa with about 17,000 members. They decided to have a crash program to send out evangelists to do the work of preaching the gospel. Unfortunately, they ran in and built this building a little too soon because there weren't any pupils available. It was the only undertaking, though, in this particular area, which was a failure. But it is hoped in the future that with a new and a new approach to bringing the Yala people to Christ, that they will have a use for this building, this Bible Institute. The only people that occupy the institute now are the bats which dangle above the altar. This is a hut being built by one of the workers at the Bible Institute. You notice the buildings are made out of adobe mud type things. The roofs are usually composed of banana poles covered with palm leaves. Not too far from Dr. Cole, we will find another missionary by the name of Harold Meisner at Okpokpa. Harold Meisner has some very interesting neighbors. You notice, you see here his younger daughter and a young boy. The particular day I was there, this father was trying to persuade Harold Meisner to make the arrangements for his daughter to marry his son. Now, he wasn't using force. That just happened to be there, I'm sure. But this is a problem, because when our missionaries go into these lands, they have to adjust somewhat to the traditions and culture of the African peoples. And one of their traditions is that the parents still, in many areas, arrange the marriages when the children are still quite young. Now, there's a bride price, because women, like I said, are valueless. They're a piece of furniture. And just like any other type property, you must pay for it. So the man who marries a woman must pay for her by giving the family so much for the trouble it took in raising her and bringing her up. Usually this involves about a year's salary. They can pay on installments in a dowry type situation. In the backyard of the Meisner house, one particular day, a young African brought his motorcycle and wanted me to take a picture of it. I didn't see too many motorcycles, quite proud of it, and I said, but I can't take a picture of this motorcycle because it's got a flat tire. Well, he was discouraged, so he put up his kickstand so that it wouldn't look like he had a flat tire, and then he wanted me to take a picture of it to show you in back here in America that they too can afford Hondas. Also in the backyard, Harold Meisner on many occasions teach the children different types of games. They're learning to play dodgeball here, and a lot of them play in the nude. Mrs. Meisner carries water from the well. Now you might be wondering, well, why doesn't Reverend Meisner, Missionary Meisner, carry the water? Well, carrying water happens to be a woman's job. And if Harold Meisner would be carrying water too frequently, it would probably affect the work that he's doing in this area because the people would look down on him since he is doing women's work. Now, Mrs. Meisner on occasions has help up there which does this work for, but not always. And when this is the case, she has to make the trip to the well about 3/4 of a mile away. A typical road in front of the Meisner home. And about 30 miles away, another missionary. I'm trying to give you the picture that these people do not necessarily live right next door to each other, but they're scattered. Some of them live as far as 80 miles away from the closest missionary, and others maybe 10, 15 miles. On this particular occasion, they were hoping to find a reason to have a party. And because they had a white friend coming from America, they thought this was good enough excuse to have a party. And so all the 10 missionaries in the Agoja province came together. Notice the prominence of the Volkswagen bus. I'm glad you caught that. Hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil. When I return to you from Africa, I bring only the good, leaving the bad. This is the missionaries of the Agoja province, with the exception of one, Eugene Bunkowski, who was down south at the time. Also one missionary from Ghana on leave by the name of Meyer. Notice all the children, and there's some friends that joined in. They thought that they were in on this, and they were just passing down the road, and so they got in on the picture. Now, during the course of the evening, Missionary Brenner tapped me on the shoulder and says, Stuart, come on outside. I want to show you something. So I went outside, and there I saw this bottle hanging from the tree. And he said, I want you to have a swig. And sure enough, it's palm wine, tapped from the sap of the palm tree. And this is what they use over there since there is a deficiency in the alcoholic beverages. The roads are very narrow up in this Agoja province because there are not too many white people living here, and the natives are still in somewhat a state of primitiveness. You'll notice that the Agoja province is approximately 50 miles by 25, 30 miles. And in this area, there are 38 languages, of which only one is written. Our missionaries in the Agoja province are linguists. They are translating these languages into the language of these people in a written form so that they too can read the Bible and other Christian materials. Notice these young Nigerians. Notice the stomachs. This is what we call umbilical hernias, caused from a lack of the proper foods or malnutrition. This is the home of missionary Wally Rosh. Now, Wally at this time was still a bachelor. Recently, he got married to another missionary, old maid, in Nigeria, and they are happily now back in the States in the linguistic school in California. They will return to Africa to live in their home. From the front door of their house, we'll see this scene with cassava drying on the drying racks. Since Wally is the only white man living within, probably 15, 20 miles of this area, he's quite a rarity and doesn't really have too much privacy, as you notice here. He wanted to convey the idea that he's up on the modern times, although it's 2 months old. The only thing I could see in the picture was the monkey. Also this day, we had some very official visitors. There was a little trouble up in the area with some smuggling, and the local authorities came up to investigate it, and on the way dropped in for a spot of tea. Wally has a beard that looks almost the same shade as the pelts of these Mona monkeys. But he has a beard for a very useful reason. Number one, he hates to shave. Number two, it's difficult to find electricity and sterile water. And number three, Africans themselves do not usually grow beards because they can't, and therefore the beard is a sign of respect. And so when in Africa, many of our missionaries wear beards. You notice the cattle are rather thin. They are not fed as well as ours. There are not too many cattle in Africa. The main source of milk, the milk that is from goats. The meat also from goats and other types of smaller animals like gazelles. Miss Ethel Gazeski. Miss Ethel Gazeski is a nurse that has been in Nigeria for a good many years. She lives alone, the closest white man to her, probably 5 or 6 miles. But she speaks the language of the Wanakondi people. She mixes well with them. She loves the work, and they love her. This is her houseboy with her. The road to her house in St. Paul's Lutheran Church, and this is St. Paul's Lutheran Church. You know, a wooden pew is no harder in Africa than it is here. Ethel uses this particular building as her clinic, where she meets with the patients daily, treating different types of tapeworms which have infected the eyes or the legs, malaria, other types of malnutrition. The people really respect her there and call her the woman doctor. It's not easy to go out to the supermarket every day to buy your goods, and so many times Ethel goes out among the villagers and picks up the greens that she will use for salads and other types of food preparations. The closest missionary to her is Lowell Kennedy, here with his wife and children. They live in this house which overlooks the valley on very many sides. When this house was built, it was felt, oh, this is such a beautiful spot for the house. But the problem was it was so high that none of the natives would ever come up there. So it's been decided to use this house as a retreat for the missionaries and instead move our missionary Kennedy closer to the natives. Missionary Kennedy, as well as the other 10 in the area, are linguists. And this is what they're doing. They're taking a language, finding a person that speaks some English, and then in turn, writing the symbols down for an alphabet, trying to formulate these into words, putting the words into phrases, the phrases into sentences, as it would be structured in this particular language. Now, this takes quite a while, several years. Then to take simple stories, not Tom and Dick or Bill and Jane, but simple Bible stories and portions of Scripture, get these translated into these languages, and in turn taking the people and instructing them in what they call literacy programs. You've probably often wondered how long it would take a person to learn to read and write their own language, although they could speak it. The answer is probably 3 months. For they already know their languages. All they have to do is connect the symbols with the sounds. And this will be the new home of the Kennedys, about 2 blocks from a very, very primitive Wanakondi tribe. From the back portion of their house, you can go down this trail and you'll reach right into the Wanakondi village. And here sits the chief. You'll notice above his head an egg. This egg looks like it's perched on top of a very enormous acorn. This is a preja, the voodoo or juju god of the Wanakondi people. As long as that egg sits on top of that acorn, no danger can possibly come to the members of this tribe, especially the chief. But they dare not venture too far away from the bounds of their tribe, which is about 3 miles in any one direction. For outside of this, the tribalism which infects these people would cause another tribe probably to murder them. It is for this reason that when the first missionaries went into this Wanakondi area, they could not speak the language. And the white missionary found a young man who spoke a few words of English and went to them and tried to relate this message. And he said, "I am your great white brother, which have come from many miles across the big pond, to befriend you and to bring you the good news of a great God." The attempt then was made by the translator to put this into the language of these Wanakondi people, and he began. This fellow says here he's our good white buddy, and he's come from a long distance across the big waters to tell us about, and he couldn't think of the word for God. And the reason he couldn't think of the word for God was there was no word for God in this particular language, as well as no word for love and many other things. The vocabulary of the Wanakondi people probably is 2,000 or 3,000 words. A word is many thoughts. It's very simple. So he knew that it was very important that he'd say what this thing God was, and he couldn't think of anything really important except a preacher. So he said, "I bring you news of the great a preacher." And the people cheered and shouted. And the missionary thought, "Boy, I'm really getting through to them," not realizing that he was preaching idolatry. And that night, there was the biggest sacrificial dance in this area that they had had for a long time. A young lady was sacrificed. And the missionaries for 3 months kept preaching about a preja unknowingly, until it finally dawned on them that they weren't communicating at all. And it was at this point that it had to be decided, we must get in there and learn the language ourselves and translate it for these people. A second problem in another area. The missionaries had converted a few people through the translator they fought. And so it was their intention that upon communion, they should try to pronounce the words of institution in the language of these people. Well, in the African tongues, most of them, especially in this area, are what they call tonal languages. There are 3 sounds, high, medium, and low. And that's the way the drum communication works. A person can say, and this in the language would mean one. You wouldn't have to say the word, just whistle a note or hum a note. Perhaps that would be two, and so forth. The different combinations that you can work with the spacing in between would designate a certain word. Well, the missionary didn't understand this, and so when he consecrated the wine, he said, Ekong. Well, Ekong happens to be wine, but Ekong is grasshopper. The chief of this tribe took a special liking for missionary Kennedy and myself, and one of the high spots was to share with us a coconut. So he sent one of his tribal members into the tree to fetch a coconut. We shared the coconut and the cola nut, and then he gave me one of his signs of authority, his scepter, the fly swoosh, usually made out of the hair of another tribal chief. However, this one was the hair of some animal, I'm sure. You notice the men working. And the many children who have come to watch the white people. Many of these have never seen white men before, and they come up and they pinch your skin, or they feel your hair to see if you're really real, or maybe they rub your skin to see if that whiteness will come off and the black will be revealed. The African word for white nigger is called peeled yam. And so when they refer to a white man, they say, there goes a peeled yam. Walking along in this particular tribe, I came upon this small little hut in this village. And I wanted to go up and take a picture of it. And as I did, these young men come in front of me and they threw their hands up in a sign that they didn't want me to go any farther. Well, at first, Lowell Kennedy and I couldn't figure out just exactly what was coming off until we realized that this house was the place where this Apriju was housed at night, and that it was strictly forbidden for anyone but anyone from that tribe itself to come within a certain distance of this sacred hut for fear of his life. You see, there's a lot of gospel to be brought there yet, as well as most of the tribes of this area. This is a yam heap. A yam is much like a potato. It looks like a potato, but it does not taste like a potato. It's very white, and they grow in these big piles of dirt, which they call yam heaps, the very stable food of the people of Nigeria, as well as a plant root, which is called cassava. Now, as we leave the Wanakondi area and move closer to the center of the activities in the Agoja province, we come to a town called Yahe. Here, we're back in civilization again. You'll notice gasoline pumps. There's a bus there. I can't pronounce the name of the bus, but each bus has its own name. They're called lorries, and as you can see, they resemble somewhat a cattle truck. But in the back, there are hard wooden seats in which the people ride as they make their trips along the roads. This is a mail truck. You've often wondered why your mail doesn't always get through. Here's the answer. They ride with the pigs and the chickens and the other people on the bus, and sometimes just don't quite make it. Here, a game of chess or checkers among those boys in the village. Notice their Western clothes. A modern barber shop, but I can grant you the haircuts never quite look like those on the board. Right in the middle of this small community is another Lutheran church, Our Savior at Yahe. In Africa today, the work of evangelism in Nigeria by the Lutheran Church, as well as many other areas by other denominations, is not by the white man, but by the native himself. It's the black man's destiny to preach to his own. They can communicate better, they know their own language much better, and are able to work and bring Christ this way. And so in Africa, in Nigeria, we have approximately 20 African pastors. We have around 50 white expatriate pastors, and in the seminary today, about 19. There are 75 Lutheran schools in Nigeria among the 17,000 members of the church. Just as women in our country wear their Sunday hats, so in Africa they put on their best Sunday scarf. After this particular service was over with, all these people went across the street, perched themselves on benches in front of this house, and began to sing songs of praise to God. And I thought, well, this is just great. It's wonderful. But why are they doing it? So I asked one of the pastors involved with the congregation. He said, oh, but there was a very bad lorry bus wreck yesterday. And two of our members were among the passengers on the bus, and they survived. And we're offering our thanks to God. And then because I was there, they decided that they would also thank him for sending to them the white missionary. And then in return, they began to say praise and prayers of praise and prayers of thanks and prayers of help for us here in the United States. Now, we've often thought about praying for the Africans, but have we ever really thought that perhaps in return they are on Sundays daily during the week also praying for our salvation and our help from God? It's a wonderful thought. This was the bus that had wrecked. You notice that each bus has a sign on the side which designates its name. The irony of this one was, God's time is the best. Not too far from the city or village of Yahe, in fact about a mile or two, is the Lutheran Hospital Emmanuel, which has just been started. We've got two new doctors that have just arrived. Building is still going underway. And it's all native help, as you can see here. I didn't want to say anything to this native. He probably had never used a saw before in his life, but he was sawing. The only problem was he was sawing backwards. You notice he's sawing forward. But the board was being cut, and so the work was being accomplished, so why say anything? Each morning before the doctor meets with the patients, one of the assistants at the hospital conducts a small devotion. On each side of him is a man who translates the language into the language of the tribes of the area, Yala, Epic, Ibibio, whatever it might be, so that the people can understand what is being said. Three languages then are spoken. Here are the patients for the day. Notice the colorful dress of the Yala people and the few Epics in the crowd here, too. This is Dr. Hickman, one of the doctors who has served in this hospital for a short time as a fill-in doctor. He dealt with the young, and he cured the old. And this gentleman's probably so old we couldn't even begin to guess his age. And age is really not important to the African. You ask a young fellow who looks like he might be in his 20s, well, how old are you? And he looks at you like, well, that's a stupid question to ask. Why did you ask me that for? And he'll say, oh, probably between 20 and 28. And he's not sure because they keep no birth records. They keep no statistics whatsoever. They've never had to. And age or time is not important at all. Now look at this picture very carefully. Here you are seeing history being made. The results of this picture were written up in the American Hypnotic Journal recently because it was the very first time that anyone had ever been hypnotized through the use of a tape recorder and an interpreter. Dr. Hickman performed this experiment in hypnosis and what he called extrasensory perception, not as a game for the missionaries who had come to witness, but because he was trying to find out about the minds and workings of these particular people. This woman kept complaining, "I've got fire in the belly, fire in the belly." Well, what is fire in the belly? It so happens that among the women of the Nigerian tribes, the most important thing for them is to have children. If they do not have children, they are considered a failure. This woman had had no children, and everything was psychological. So through the use of hypnosis and suggestions that he posed to her under hypnosis, he cured this woman of her fear of not having children. This is the home of the doctor, and this is one of the most outstanding missionaries that we have in the Nigerian fields, without question, Eugene Bunkowski. I understand now, and I could be corrected on this, Dr. Mayer, but he is now the main advisor for the missionary board. Is that correct?
Chairman of the mission staff.
I see. You notice that he, too, is working in the linguistic area. He's working with a new Yala boy, which they have found that has a slight dialect in the Yala yet. And they're trying to determine through his sounds and nodding of head where the vocabulary lies and what type of structure the particular language offers. Now, you might have wondered, well, what do the women do in Africa? Do they help their husbands? They certainly do in many respects. But one of their main functions is also to teach the children. And here you see Mrs. Bunkowski with her daily preparation of teaching her daughter to read and to write. A typical African meal called fufu. Notice in the middle of the table a finger bowl. One puts his hands into this water bowl, then grabs a hunk of yam. He rolls this yam into a little ball, and as Nurse Susan Hanneman's doing, dips it into a stew, which is comprised of some meats, if they have it available, usually some types of herbs or grasses, and then flipped into the mouth in this solid ball, hitting the rear of the throat and dropping straight down. You couldn't possibly chew it. During the course of this meal, we heard some cracking and crunching outside. We ran outside, and to our horror, we saw this sight. This was the Agoja fire, which swept the whole province, endangering many of the lives and also endangering the hospital itself. And here I saw one of the most amazing things in my life. All these natives, although their huts were being burned to the ground, would come running to the aid of this hospital because they knew of its importance in the community. And they fought that fire, and after it was over with, slumped in exhaustion. Only one small building was lost, but the hospital was saved, but many of the villagers lost their own homes. This was the same fire which destroyed the crops of Dr. Cole, which I told you about earlier. And as the sun sets and a snake wanders down out of the tree, we retire, recording the events of the day. And with that, I would like to take a small break, giving you all a chance to stretch. The program will probably continue for about 20 minutes longer. Would someone care to get the lights? Would you care to stand up and stretch, please?